Hey everybody, welcome to Flaherty's on Films. This week we're talking about Avatar.
Hit the music!
And I am Michael Flaherty.
And this is Flaherty's on Films, a podcast.
What is that?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. It's a podcast where we, the Flaherty's, discuss films.
Because we're siblings.
We sure are. And this week we're talking about Avatar from 2009.
Whoa. That's Michael, my favorite film.
I mean, it was the biggest film in the world that everybody remembers everything about. But just to refresh some memories out there, why don't you tell the folks at home what it's about?
You can fast forward to this part. a paraplegic marine dispatched to the moon. It's a moon.
Yeah, they made a whole point about that.
Well, what am I going to pay attention the whole time?
It's three fucking hours.
The moon Pandora, on a unique mission, becomes torn between following his orders and protecting the world he feels is his home.
Yeah. Boy, oh boy.
Shit. Man, that is a lot. It's heavy.
So, let's talk about our initial reactions. But first, I want to steal from you.
Oh.
I think we've mentioned it more than once on this podcast where you talked about Toy Story. And you said, the creators were like, if the first thing critics say about it was talking about the technology or how it looks, they've failed. This is what that movie is.
You can't not talk about the technology and basically only that.
Right. I mean, it's beautiful. It's a very beautiful film. What did you think?
Oh, it's coming right at me. We said that a lot, I think, when we
even though we
it.
Were not watching
even
it
we're
3D.
Not watching it too, yeah. Colleen, what were your initial impressions of it?
Well, my initial impressions were I wanted to watch it in 3D again because it's really annoying that a lot of the shots have like something in the foreground, middle ground, and background so that you can really take advantage of the 3D, which is just really a little busy. Even though, again, the technology really holds up. It's so beautiful. It should have been a 20-minute IMAX film, not a 3-hour long feature length film.
Like narrated by Werner Herzog.
That would be amazing. Or Sigourney Weaver, who is the only good part about this movie. Oh, no. Her and Phoebe's brother.
So you didn't like it?
I did not like it. I actually thought it was a heaping pile of trash film.
I went into it thinking I wouldn't like it, but I'm like, I want to give this a chance because I know people actually really like it. But my biggest takeaway, and this is going to be my least favorite part, it's just so boring. it's just really dull. And I don't even understand fully why it is, but like everything that happens is so just like, all right, here we go.
I am going to tell on myself here that when I saw it in theaters, I remember thinking like, whoa, because it was an experience, but it was like just being on a cool ride.
Exactly.
And watching it at home is not a cool ride.
I'll tell you what's a fucking great ride.
What?
Our first segment, bam.
Time for Sam. This is the roller coaster part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some cool facts about the film.
Woo, my hands are in the air.
Woo!
Get those hands in the air. We're about to go up and down on this ride.
Oh, boy.
That came out wrong.
So you have some down facts? You have some like...
Well, you got to ramp up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Get excited, and then depressing fact.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, so in 1994, James Cameron came up with the general idea and outline for a film. He would have to be patient, though, because the technology just wasn't there. In 1996, after wrapping up Titanic, he started floating the idea of making his 1994 script. His original plan was to release the film in 1999. The technology was almost there, but it would cost $400 million, and it wouldn't be exactly what Cameron wanted.
Is that a lot for a movie?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Surprisingly, he couldn't find a studio to fund that expensive of a film, especially when the director was admitting it would be subpar. Finally, in 2002, something would happen that would change everything. Cameron would find his answer in a movie called Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
Ah.
The second one?
Mm-hmm.
Because two. That's how you remember.
Nice.
The character of Gollum finally proved to Cameron that technology had finally caught up with his dreams. And after 12 years...
I mean, the prequels have been out at this point, right?
When she said 1999, that was my first thought.
Right, like, but he's seen pod racing.
Actually, the motion capture technology of Jar Jar Binks was pretty good.
It's pretty good.
But Gollum was Gollum. Better.
Yeah. We got to stop bringing up Jar Jar every episode.
Don't tell me what to do.
All right.
Was that one on your list?
Phantom Menace. I want John to watch it. So that would, you should probably put it on there.
And after 12 years in 2006, Cameron would start production of his film, Avatar. With a film starring aliens, one of the things Cameron had to do was create a language for the Na'vi.
No, that's not the first thing you have to do. Sorry, I'm not a filmmaker, but I feel like, no, that's not actually, you have to do that first.
It was one of the first things, like they did the language, they brought in botanists.
He just wanted to do a language.
He brought in botanists to figure out the plants and
first
stuff.
First thing you have to.
So Cameron hired a linguistic doctor, Paul R. Former, to construct an entirely new language. It had to be easy enough for the actors to pronounce, but somehow not resemble any human language. Former created 1,000 words of the Na'vi language.
Because you had to.
Which is just what you have to do. If you're writing a script.
Right.
You're plotting out the
story.
It would
make no sense.
If you haven't defined what the alien language is, it's just not going to.
Yeah, when I watch Star Wars and Chewbacca just growls, I'm like, it just takes me out of the movie.
They obviously didn't think of the language first.
Obviously.
And that's what made it fail.
Sam Worthington would later say it was easier for him to speak the Na'vi language than to speak in the necessary American accent.
That was quite clear. I was like, when Sam Worthington starts talking, I'm like, that dude is not American.
Sam, that's not a point in your favor, buddy.
Speaking of Worthington.
Poor Sam Worthington. Who the fuck is he?
Although big stars like Jake Gyllenhaal and Matt Damon were considered for the role, Cameron cast Worthington, who at the time was living in his car. Cameron
is now not living in his car. Because Michael and I saw his IMDb page, and
it's mostly the Avatar sequels.
The ones that have
non-existent.
There will be a lot.
Yeah.
Cameron wanted.
I think it was in Terminator 4.
Oh, there you go. See, that's a thing.
I mean, you get paid for that.
Yeah, you get a paycheck and everything.
Cameron wanted an unknown and.
No, now we're just shitting on Sam Worthington.
So sorry, Sam.
Who and clearly listens to this podcast. He was so waiting for his shout out.
Yeah, sorry. You should probably stop listening.
It's not going to get
better.
It's
not going to get better.
And he liked Worthington as he felt he looked like a guy you'd want to hang with and get a beer.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
He's so nice, I bet.
So the character of Jake is a paraplegic. So to create Jake's legs in the film, they actually created prosthetic casts of the legs of a real paraplegic. And then while filming, Worthington would tuck his real legs into the wheelchair and the casts were placed on the wheelchair. And then his real legs were digitally removed in post-production.
Like Lieutenant Dan.
Like Lieutenant Dan. So joining Worthington in the cast would be Zoe Saldana, Sir Gorney Weaver, wow, and Stephen Lang. Before filming started, and also
Stephen
Phoebe's
Lang,
brother.
The dodgeball guy?
Who?
The tall
He's
scientist.
The colonel.
Oh, okay. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dodgeball guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a pirate on our team? He said that.
He's a pirate.
Wait, there's a guy on our team dressed like a pirate?
Before filming started, Cameron took the cast to Hawaii and took them into the wilderness. They spent their days fishing, building fires and shelters, and wandering around the woods. It was meant to teach them how to rough it. However, every night they would go back to their resorts to get a comfy night's sleep. Saldana said that this was a great experience. As they filmed inside a studio on concrete ground, it helped to know how it really felt walking through the trees in a forest ground.
Sure. Joel David Moore is the guy from Dodgeball.
Okay.
The tall scientist.
I think I will remember that not at all.
I don't even remember it now.
Yeah,
right.
Joel something? Yeah.
Joel David. Okay. That's a nice name.
That's nice.
Wasn't there three names?
Yeah, I already forgot it. Because I X'd out.
So obviously the big thing about Avatar is the 3D and CGI work. So let's talk about how they did it. The actors had a combination of motion sensors all over their body and tiny facial cameras attached to their heads. These captured every slight movement and the tiniest of facial expressions. And this technique created the most realistic CGI of its time.
It looks pretty good.
You know what? It has aged.
Yeah? You think so?
Yeah, I do think so.
I mean, it's 11 years old. I still think it looks pretty good.
It looks fine. But I mean, Thanos looks better.
I think Thanos looks the same, really? Maybe yes. A little better.
I think it's aged.
All right.
I think you agree. It looks good, but
okay.
It's not perfect. That's all I'm saying.
To kind of get an idea of how to, I guess, direct every scene, they actually would shoot a simulator cam, which is a merge of a 3D camera and the virtual camera systems. So they could actually see, while the actors are acting, kind of this augment reality around them on the small monitor of what the scene would look like with the
That's kind of how they do with The Mandalorian. They were like this, the giant screens around them actually showing the environment. It's pretty cool.
They weren't just on set, or they weren't like on location?
Yeah, they were on green screens.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
Really?
That's better than Avatar.
That is a little better. Yeah. 2009 was a weird time. Remember, everyone was like, I guess movies are going to be 3D from now on. And then, nope.
You know, I was thinking about when I was, this isn't an interesting story, but I'm going to tell it anyways. What I was thinking about when I was doing this researching is when I would go to theaters around this time and they would all do those advertisements at the beginning about how exciting it was that this was now digital and not like the original reels. Yes. Do you guys remember that time period?
I was working in a movie theater just like a year before. So I remember some of the films were digital and some of them were reels. So
it was like such a big excitement. So because of this new technology, the film took 4 years to complete. Some of the CGI scenes...
Unlike Avatar 2.
Well, okay, if you consider that the start production, of this was 94.
That's true, yeah.
So it's actually 16 years. But anyways, some of the CGI scenes were so intricate that they took an average of 47 hours to render. Just another interesting fact about time. We learn from the dates of Jake's logs in the film that the entire film takes place over just 96 days.
Oh, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. He like learns a new language?
That's just like 3 months, barely.
How does he learn a whole language and everything? That's weird.
As we've discussed on this podcast in the past, James Cameron is a dick. One way. Yeah.
Apparently Avatar 2 is coming out December 2020.
21.
This story released one day ago that says 2020 on the 17th of December.
Whoa. Because I hear, look, if you look at the Avatar page, it says December 17th, 2021. So I think they got
people don't got their facts in order.
If only they had a Sam who we keep interrupting and won't let her finish her sentence.
Oh, yeah, it's your segment now.
As we discussed on this podcast, James Cameron is a dick. One way he had changed with the times from directing Titanic is that this film was shot in 2007. Most people had cell phones. Cameron kept a nail gun on set. And if your phone went off during filming, he would nail it to the wall above the exit sign.
Jesus!
What a fucking weirdo.
He also apparently was very concerned about climate change and would only allow plant-based food to be served.
Oh, that's actually nice.
That's nice. Is it? I'm okay with that.
Yeah, sorry, it's good.
That's being a dick for good.
If you hate the planet, then it's bad.
Yeah, and I hate the planet.
Oh,
yeah,
that's,
so then it's bad.
I mean, nailing cell phones, that's like just being super rude and mean with people's property. Being like, hey, I actually want to do something about climate change with the money I'm putting into this production. Okay.
It's good.
Okay. Also, like Titanic, Cameron would partner with James Horner for the musical score. Michael, what'd you think of the musical score?
I thought it was all right.
Okay. I don't remember it at all.
I thought it sounded like Lion King.
Oh, I like Lion King.
So it must be good.
Must be good.
Horner would later say this was the most difficult film and the biggest challenge of his career. It would take him a year and a half to make it. And while during that year and a half, he would start at 4 a.m. and work until 10 p.m.
Really?
It must have been good.
The movie premiered on December 10th of 2009. The premiere date actually had to be pushed back to allow time for theaters to get the necessary 3D projectors installed.
Sure.
And it's pretty well known that Avatar broke several box office records, including the highest 3D grossing film, the highest IMAX grossing film, the fastest movie to gross $2.5 billion, and of course, the highest grossing film of all time. It would hold this title until...
Avengers?
Well, that's your question of the week. What year?
Oh, I don't know what year. What year did the big Avengers come out?
Well,
I'm going to guess. Okay, I'm guessing.
All right, my guess.
This was 2009.
Oh, shit. I wrote something before that.
I said I said 2017.
I said 2013.
2019.
Yes!
Oh. It held it for 10 years. The movie to beat it was Avengers Endgame.
Oh, okay. All right.
The big Avengers. I said it.
You did not. You meant the other Avengers.
I don't know what I mean. One of them.
This movie was nominated for 9 Academy Awards. It would win Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, and Best Visual Effects.
That's earned. That's good.
Yeah, it was nominated for, but did not win, Best Sound Mixing, Best Sound Editing, Best Original Score, Best Film Editing, Best Director, and Best Picture.
Yep, that's all fair.
So this is actually the most interesting thing I read about this film.
Ooh.
It's just kind of makes you think about it. So this film is 40% live action and 60% CGI. So the argument was made when it was nominated for Best Picture is, should it be nominated for Best Picture or Best Animated Picture? Because it is more CGI than it is.
Well, I think it's dumb that it's a different category in the first place.
Which was the whole WALL-E thing.
Right.
So it is actually a part of the rules for the Academy Awards that a film to be in the Best Animated Picture category, it has to be 75%. Oh. So 15% of this film is the only reason why it could be nominated for Best Picture.
That was interesting.
I did think that was pretty interesting.
Interesting.
Pretty interesting.
I just like how much we're saying interesting.
It is interesting.
It's interesting.
It's interesting that we're doing that.
All right. Everyone settled down.
This is not super interesting.
All right, we're coming to the end of the roller coaster. We're stopping.
We're cruising on it,
Oh, they took my picture.
Did we all make the face?
All right.
We were going to go for the Charlie's Angels.
Oh, I like looking bored.
It's funny because like, am I even on a roller coaster?
I was having a fun time, though, so it was a lie.
Okay, so this is the most expensive movie ever produced at the time of its release. It cost $237 million. I was just curious if you guys had a guess on what film beat that.
After this?
Yep. It was only 2 years
Avengers
after.
Okay.
The Avengers 1.
No, it's such a ridiculous film, but it's Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides.
I feel like I actually knew that. I feel like you have brought that up before, and I can't remember why. That
I movie have a was, lot of feelings about it.
That movie was weirdly expensive. I've heard that fact before.
Pirates 1 is on our list, right?
Yeah.
Thank God.
I think
that's a good one.
Thank God.
It's the only good one.
Dun, 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 dun.
That's actually a really good score.
That's a great score.
So May 27, 2017, Pandora, the World of Avatar, opened in Disney's Animal Kingdom in Florida. Apparently, it's very...
If anyone just is curious about it, just Google it. Watch a YouTube video about it. It looks amazing. Like
it looks really cool, but apparently
they were definitely banking on Avatar still being popular 10 years later. Because wouldn't you think it would be after the way it took over the whole world? But yeah, it turns out no one remembers anything about it.
And my final fact for you guys today is about Avatar 2.
Yay.
Yay, excellent.
So why is Avatar 2 taking so damn long?
Because nobody wants to watch Avatar anymore.
It's because once again,
wait,
Cameron.
I think I know this. There's like, he wants to kind of water technology. That's taking too long.
That's exactly it.
Ooh.
So once again, Cameron decided that he wanted to do something that wasn't quite at its technological ability yet.
Hasn't he seen Finding Nemo? It's been done.
Underwater shooting. So most of Avatar 2 will take.
They
place.
Swim into the Gungan city in Phantom Menace.
Most of Avatar 2 will take place underwater, and underwater shooting is very difficult in live action films. Oh. So he had to wait until he could figure out something that would be, as he said, groundbreaking as the original.
They're going to do a live action Little Mermaid. I bet that's going to be.
Which will be so creepy.
Yeah. I'm going to watch that, though.
They should make it like an animated version of that, because then it'd be nice and colorful.
Oh, that would be fun. And then the fish could like sing and dance?
And they would have really expressive faces. That'd be really good.
That'd be fun. Wait, but what if they're like real crabs? Isn't that what people want?
I don't know. Man, I'm not a movie. I mean, then you'd have to make the language of crabs. I don't know.
I'm not a movie? Is that what you just said?
Well, I don't know what I'm saying.
In 2017, Cameron said, basically, whenever you add water to any problem, it makes it 10 times harder. So we've thrown a lot of horsepower, innovation, imagination, and new technology at the problem, and it's taken us about a year and a half now to work out how we're going to do it. And we're getting really good data, beautiful character motion, and great facial performance captures. We've basically cracked the code.
Okay. And that was...
Bam.
Time for Sam. Sam, thank you so much for those.
Thank you.
Really interesting
facts.
It was
interesting, yeah.
So interesting. Anyway, let's go on to our next segment. Hear from the best of the best on what they have to say about the films we all love in a little segment we call...
Critics Corner.
I'll start. The narrative would be ho-hum without the spectacle. But what spectacle? Oh. Avatar is dizzying, enveloping. Vertiginous. That's a word. Anyway, I ran out of adjectives an hour into its 161 minutes.
Yeah, we could tell when you made up one, David. Come on.
I think it's like maybe it's green, like lush. Anyway, David Edelstein of New York Magazine.
This is from Zuni, who's an Amazon reviewer. Here we go. It's just a popcorn movie with a stupid plot and horrible special effects. It reminds me of King Kong, except King Kong was a movie with some thought put into it. Avatar has this silly plot of some stupid imaginary world where everything is blue tinted and some beasts running around with some loincloths.
I think loincloths is what he's trying to say.
The floating islands look like some giant poop plops, and you could tell the director was thinking, oh, I'm gonna get him with this. Well, not me. I just wanted to keep the fast forwarding until the end to get it over with. I don't care if peeps hate on me for not liking this movie because I'm a hater of it.
Wow.
Damn, man. It's crazy.
It's a remote control movie experience. A high-tech wish you were here scribbled on a very expensive postcard.
What the fuck does that mean?
Stephanie Zakarek of Salon.com.
I could examine that sentence for an hour. I don't know if
I think she's saying a more sophisticated way of us saying it's like just a fun ride.
Sure. Right? Sure. This one's from Peppa Doc, an Amazon reviewer. The only redeeming feature about this film was the quality of the video animation. It was outstanding. But the left-wing liberal idiots in Hollywood with their ugly American exploitation of the environment and testosterone-laden military bent on carnage and destruction is garbage.
That's like one of my favorite parts, is how horribly one-dimensional and stereotypical the military guys were.
This isn't a movie. It's political commentary from the far left that runs Hollyweird.
Yes.
If I could give this piece of garbage less than one star, I would. The lousy plot was so predictable as to be funny if it wasn't so pathetic. They will try to make you believe what they think, and if you don't, you must be too stupid to understand.
I don't think anyone watching Avatar would think, I must be too stupid to understand what's going on here.
Well, that's just going over my head.
I mean, it is so complicated what they're trying to get at here.
A lot of layers.
I did say to you the other day, I think maybe James Cameron is kind of like a left-wing Michael Bay.
Yeah. Do you want to expand on that?
Sure. I mean, I don't know if you have all seen something like, say, Armageddon, where the beginning is Bruce Willis chucking golf balls at the environmentalists. And also he likes flags and patriotism and Bud Light. And then James, you know.
Do you just mean he's a lefty and an asshole?
No, I mean he's a lefty who does like a political message in his films in a really obvious way. Like that's so obvious, it's a little embarrassing.
But he's an asshole also.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Do you want to continue for a bit?
Rewatching it with fresh eyes 10 years later, the movie's pluses and minuses both rise into much starker relief. The verdict is... It's fine.
Well, it was a fresh review.
Zaki Hansen from the San Francisco
Chronicle.
That was
probably this last year then.
Probably.
This room is from Slip Knight, which is interesting. It's like a Pokemon. How many buckets?
By the way, I just for listeners at home, Michael never gets to see these reviews until we're live. So that's why he just sometimes is reading and cannot.
Okay, I want to read ahead because I'm so confused by the time. All right, here we go. How many buckets of cheese does it take to get to the moon? One, and it's called Avatar, and it's a colossal bucket of cheese. Seems like James Cameron teamed up with Disney, went on a wild acid trip while channeling the ghost of Dr. Seuss, and came up with this concept of exploiting the Native American culture and experience and channeling into a sci-fi popcorn action flick. That's it in a nutshell. Sure, it sounds great, but you don't
looks
even...
great.
But you don't even care about the character's risk-taking, because if the avatar dies, he simply wakes up like in a dream or video game. Maybe they just should have done a psych eval for Jake, considering his handicap. He may get overly attached to a body with working legs.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
That's a good point. Oh, speaking of cheese, Unobtainium Pandora? Seriously? I pegged this for what it was when I saw it at the front of the box. Why in God's name do I not trust my instincts and listen to the plethora of star-struck buffoons out there? Over and out!
That was my favorite review.
That's very fun.
You know why it was my favorite? Because it was so silly and it had so many good points.
Yeah, that's actually good points.
It was like, poor Jake, who has now working legs. Also, probably exploitation of Native Americans. That's But how many buckets of cheese does it take to get to the moon?
Here's another question. What's your favorite part of the film?
Are you talking about our next segment? Fan favorite, favorite part, least favorite part?
Sure am.
So my favorite part is probably the visuals or whatever. But my real favorite part is Sigourney Weaver and her performance. But my real favorite part...
Does Sigourney do a good job?
I just like her.
So she was on screen.
Yes.
That's good.
I also like when she has...
And you're like, Alien was a good movie.
Yeah. And Aliens. I actually liked James Cameron's Aliens also. But I also like that when she's her big avatar, she's got like her... Oh, fuck. Cornell or...
Stanford.
Stanford. So she's got a Stanford shirt on. And it's like... But avatars are like 10 feet tall. So someone had to make that for her. So she's like, I want everyone in the Pandora jungle to know where I went to school. It was very fancy. But my...
Sigourney Weaver went to Stanford.
And she wanted everybody to know. My real, real favorite part is Phoebe's brother plays the best corporate asshole who is literally playing golf all the time on like, and just like, all right, tree huggers. And there's a, okay, we'll get more into that later, but that's my real favorite part.
You just like how silly his character was.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of silly characters, but his was the best. Michael, what was your favorite part?
Favorite was visuals.
Okay. What was your least favorite part?
I was trying to think of why this movie is so boring to me. And here's a claim that maybe you'll disagree with. I think Avatar is more about the Na'vi than Titanic is about the Titanic. And where I'm going with that is that I feel like this movie is so like, oh, look at the Na'vi. Oh, look at where they live. Oh, look at what they do. Oh, look at how they hunt. That's like... You know you're telling a story, right? Like, with, like, a main character? And the main character, to me, it's almost like you could take him out of the movie and you'd almost have the same movie.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's why it's just so unengaging. And even on paper, I think the main character makes a lot of sense. He's ex-Marine, and he doesn't have legs.
He mentions it a lot, that he is an ex-Marine.
Right. So, obviously, when he meets up with the Na'vi, who the military hates, and the military is going to give him legs, new legs to, like, betray the Na'vi, obviously, oh, he'd be very conflicted, and he would have a huge motivation to be against the Na'vi. But just the way the story is told, maybe you'll disagree, I just feel like he never, ever makes a difficult decision at all or has any kind of introspection. He's always just like, oh, I'm the Na'vi now. Oh, I love you. Oh, I'm going to fight for them. And it's just always like...
He doesn't seem tortured about this changing loyalty.
He does amazing things. Like, first he's chosen because his brother was whatever. And then he's able to descend into the Na'vi culture. But he never is like... He never does anything. He never is like... It's never about him at all.
He's a product of the situation.
Exactly.
We are the main character on this roller coaster that is.
And I think Avatar. The reason why is it's just because the movie just wants to like, oh, look at the Na'vi. Just the whole time. And I think that's why it's so boring. Well, and another thing is that the movie starts off and you're like, okay, I get what you're setting up. Na'vi good, military bad. And that's basically it for the entire film. That never really changes.
Sure. Why would it change?
Well, it would change if you're like, if you're following Aladdin and then Aladdin's like, has all this power. And then Aladdin realizes like, oh, I've been a fucking dick. Like that stuff is happening. But none of that stuff.
Yeah, there's no complexity. Which,
but nothing changes. It's all you could. You know where the story's going right from.
Right. We've seen Pocahontas and Fern Gully.
Even if you have, even if you haven't seen those movies, it's still just. It's so not about him. I feel.
In Fern Gully, Robin Williams raps, which is really cool. And it's that just, is not in this film.
It's just so long. It spends so much time doing anything.
It's so long.
That it's like, why don't you spend 1 second having the main character feel conflicted about anything? You know,
maybe Sam Worthington, that is above his acting capabilities.
That's why I think this movie...
Sorry, Sam!
It's not that I dislike it. I think it truly is a bad film because it just is, doesn't tell his story very well.
Okay. Can I expand on that? Because I actually agree with everything you said.
Okay.
I mean, it's
excellent.
It's too long, yeah. First of all. Like, sure, Pandora is beautiful, but so you were just talking about how, like, Jake doesn't even need to be in this movie. Yet we do spend too much time with him.
Yeah.
The first 30 minutes of the movie, we're not on Pandora. We're on Earth. Jake is in a bar. Then Jake is in the gutter. Then we have to, like, it's so long. And it doesn't need to be. And also, okay, and I hate to go there, but I'm gonna. But as we discussed, can a movie be racist when it's about blue people? Yeah, because it is just this very classic noble, savage, white savior thing, right? These Na'vi, the Na'vi are even the main character, the woman that he falls in love with, which we will not go too far into. I mean, she's a sexy cat person, but it's fine. Like... she is not complex, you know, she is just
well, nobody's complex. That's my devil's advocate response.
Okay. Yeah, but she's like, the idea is there, this is a huge commercial product that's making money off these kind of exploitative ideas of the native people.
Well, that kind of goes, that kind of reinforces my point, where if this movie, all this movie is like, look at this Na'vi culture. Well, then maybe that's cultural appropriation of the worst kind, where you take Native American culture, you gift wrap it, and then you make a movie. Like, oh, isn't that awesome?
It's exactly what we're watching.
That's all that is.
Yeah. It's and it's like, I feel like it's not trying that hard to be alien, except in its aesthetic.
Right.
Like, it's so obviously just Native Americans.
Except for glowy lights and cat people.
Yeah. Sexy blue cat people.
They gotta be sexy for sure.
Like a little too sexy, and it's like it's a very off-putting way. It is. I don't like that he has to have sex with her, like, or whatever the braid shit is.
Yeah,
it's weird, man. It's
so. What was your least favorite part? I missed it.
My least favorite part, I think, is what you were saying. That it's just, it's fundamentally not a good movie. It doesn't have a good plot. It's too simple for a movie that had 3 hours. And also, I think it kind of goes to the very first thing I said. Like, what a beautiful 20-minute IMAX feature this would be. But it's not a real film.
I think it might have a good story on paper. Like, theoretically, it has a good story. But it just, the way it's told, it mostly just wants to be about, look at the effects.
And I don't want to be pro-military here, but...
where's this going?
The villain is dumb. Like, the whole, like, I'm the U.S. military and I'm gonna... They're not the U.S. military. They are paid mercenaries who just hate the Na'vi for no reason.
Yeah, it doesn't
like, it's
make
fucking
sense.
Weird. Like, and he's just like the main villain guy who just goes down fighting and just wants to kill as many Na'vi. Like, why? What? Why? In fact, that why might make a more interesting story, but we don't have any introspection because you're right. Every character is too simplified.
Yeah.
But it is worse when you're exploiting the noble savage stereotype, I think. Is that fair?
Sure. I don't know.
I'm just saying it might be a bit racist for a super lefty, Holly weird movie.
Yeah, I think so.
Just a bit.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay, so I don't think we like this film very much.
I'm going to say we both dislike it. Let's now walk through the plot of the film.
Yeah, normally we do an intern summary, but this week it's brought to you by Wikipedia.
Oh, that's fine.
I didn't even know it was the year 2154.
What did you think it was?
I just think it's weird that Stanford still exists and has the same kind of logo. Anyway.
It's true. You think they would have revitalized it with a glowy lights? Maybe a swish?
Well, I just think, you know, universities probably won't even exist then. Anyway.
Maybe some neon.
The year is 2154. Humans have depleted Earth's natural resources. They have? Was this part of it?
Oh, this is fun.
Leading to a severe energy crisis? That seems important. Was that in the movie?
Well, keep going. Keep going.
The Resources Development Administration mines for valuable mineral, unobtainium, which...
Seems like that'd be hard to obtain.
I think that's what my friend David said. They wanted to call it not too easy to get at, but they decided unobtainium. On Pandora. Wow, that really actually has a nice...
Can I say that? Because I feel good. I feel like this more reinforces my point. We're on paper.
This could have been a better movie. Yeah. On Pandora, a densely forested habitable moon orbiting the gas giant Poliferius. Is that in the movie?
No.
Pandora, whose atmosphere is poisonous to human, is inhabited by the Na'vi, a species of 10-foot tall, or 3 meters, blue-skinned, sapient humanoids that live in harmony with nature and worship a mother goddess named Iwa. Okay, so this doesn't make any sense. Oh, sorry. Was I being offensive to the Na'vi people?
They put so much work in their fucking language. You'd think you would respect it just a little bit.
No. I have no respect for that, because it's the first thing you need to do to get this movie going.
If you're
going
to tell a movie, yeah, sure.
Make a movie. Sorry, so there's an energy crisis on Earth, because the movie seems like it's just a greedy corporation.
Yeah.
Not like people have no energy without this.
Now we see their motivations more.
Yeah, actually, so maybe Phoebe's brother isn't just a total dick. He's like, this is the only way we can keep Earth alive.
He could have just said that, man. That could have made a better film.
Dude, there's a scene where Sigourney Weaver comes in and's like, keep out of my science. And he goes, come with me. He leaves his golf game. He goes, see what this is? It's unobtainium, and it's worth whatever an ounce. That's why we're here. And I'm like, what a natural way to speak to your coworker.
In retrospect, that seems like kind of a weird line, because they're not there for money. It sounds like from this description, they're there because Earth has depleted resources.
Maybe both things.
Who fucking knows?
Boy, what a complex.
So many layers, man. This is an onion of a story. I'm going to continue. To explore Pandora's biosphere, scientists use Na'vi human hybrids called avatars, operated by genetically matched humans. Jake Sully, a paraplegic former Marine, replaces his deceased identical twin brother as an operator of one Augustine.
Pause. This is what I'm talking about, how the backstory took way too long, because we had to see him go to see his brother, and then they'd be like, they killed him just with a paper in his wallet. And I'm like, what's this for? What's the point of this?
I'm not a writer. I don't know shit about anything. But my rule about what makes good narration is if you could take it out and still tell the same story, it was probably bad narration. And I feel like we didn't learn anything from his narration. Like, if he's just a guy with no legs and he's beaten up at a bar and then they take him into the... Like, I feel like you could just interpret all the things about him just from what
you
see.
You could say, oh, your brother died. I know. And it's like, that's done. You did it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's too bad. So I got to rewind.
Oh, sorry. Dr. Grace Augustine, which is a nice name. I like that.
I'm going to rewind just a second. As an operator of one, Dr. Grace Augustine, head of the Avatar program, considers Sully an inadequate replacement, but accepts his assignment as a bodyguard.
Pause. I just remember we watched this with our dad, who... She smoked a lot. I guess that was her having a character trait. And Dad would be like, that's so fake.
Well, why do you say that was fake?
I don't. He's like smoking around all that science equipment.
It was a fake cigarette.
Oh.
That's what he was saying.
That's what he was saying. He's like, it's a prop.
He's like, I think computers made this. While escorting the avatars of Grace and fellow scientists, dodgeball guy, they collect biological data. Jake's avatar is attacked by a Thanator.
A panther, like a really big one.
And flees into the forest. Wait, isn't this the big rhino with the big horns? With the big, like, hammerhead shark?
No, they have the hammerheads, and he's like, haha, I got you. And then the panther comes in. Gotcha. Isn't that it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Or is that a different time? I don't know. This movie's so fucking long.
Flees into the forest, where he's rescued by Neytiri. Neytiri.
Neytiri, yeah.
A female Na'vi. Oh.
And we learn that Neytiri was really good at school, because they used to have a school and now they don't, which is why they all speak English.
And she's
perfectly and understand idioms and stuff. Like, they're so good at English. Anyway.
They're really good. She's a sexy cat lady. Witnessing an auspicious sign, she takes him to her clan, whereupon Neytiri's mother, Mot, the clan's spiritual leader, orders her daughter to initiate Jake into their society.
They have, like, magic tree stuff.
So why did Jake get into the society?
Because of magic tree stuff.
Yeah.
The magic tree stuff went all over him.
That's a plot. You want to continue?
I sure do. Colonel Miles Quaritch, head of RDA's private security force, so he's not in the military. I don't know why he's colonel. Promises Jake that the company will restore his legs if he gathers information about the... Mikey, I totally get what you mean. On paper, this should be like, whoa.
At least a basic. The pieces are there for a basic good movie.
Right. And the clan's gathering place. A giant tree called Home Tree. Which stands...
Do you think the actor who plays the colonel looks like an action figure?
Yes. He absolutely does. So the Home Tree... Name of the tree stands above the richest deposit of unobtainium in the area. Pause. I'm sorry you already heard the story, but I saw this movie in theaters. And when we left, we went out to drinks with a friend of ours from Texas who was like, you know, side drilling's a thing. So you would talk about in Texas, you can, without buying the land, you can buy the mineral rights to a land separately and then just drill underneath it, which, like, if they have space technology, they can probably do that. Anyway, when Grace learns of this, she transfers herself, Jake, and Norm, dodgeball guy, to an outpost. Over the following 3 months, Jake grows to sympathize with the natives. After Jake is initiated...
That's the thing. Does he grow? Like, I feel like he just...
He just is.
Yeah, he just...
A light switch goes on.
Yeah.
After Jake is initiated into the tribe, he and Natiri choose each other as mates, and bang...
They bang. They fuck.
Jake reveals his change of allegiance when he attempts to disable a bulldozer that threatens to destroy a sacred Navi site. When Quadrich shows a video recording of Jake's attack on the bulldozer to administer Parker Selfridge, Phoebe's brother, and another in which Jake admits that the Navi will never abandon Home Tree. Selfridge orders Home Tree destroyed. Oh my God.
Oh, we're cruising.
This is my favorite part where he goes, I know it's going to be bad PR, but get it done. And it's like, How is it going to be bad PR? Do they have reporters on site who are talking back to Earth? They've established in the movie it takes 6 years to get to Pandora. Where's this bad PR?
Maybe journalists could just be androids. Like, if you could be a journalist and then you could, like, you know, people have, like, iPads that just go on segways and just sort of travel around. And it's like you're in another place.
Couldn't they just turn it off?
That's a good point. Well, that's a story.
PR disaster.
They turned our iPads off. Anything could be happening there.
Probably totally a genocide, maybe.
That's the only conclusion I could come to. Where are we in the story?
Despite Grace's argument
that destroying Home Tree could damage the biological neural network native to Pandora,
so dumb.
Selfridge gives Jake and Grace 1 hour to convince the Navi to evacuate before commencing the attack. While trying to warn the Navi, Jake confesses to being a spy, and the Navi take him and Grace captive. Seeing this, Quaritch...
I guess we're never going to get that one.
Man, destroy Home Tree, killing Natiri's father, the clan chief, and many others. Moat frees Jake and Grace, but they are detached from their avatars and imprisoned by Quaritch's forces. Pilot Trudy Cachon, Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh, I forgot. I do love Michelle Rodriguez in this. She's so fun.
But just because she's her.
Yeah. Not because of...
Not because of the script or the director.
Or anything she gets to do. I get to see her. That was fun.
Is disgusted by Quaritch's brutality, frees Drake, Grace, and Norm, and airlifts them to Grace's outpost. But during the escape, Quaritch fires at them, hitting Grace.
And at one point, she's like painted like a Navi, which I'm like, is that offensive?
I don't know.
To regain the Navi's trust, Jake connects his mind to that of Torek, a dragon-like predator feared and honored by the Navi. This movie's so dumb.
Oh, a dragon. I mean, you could be smart and have a dragon.
It does sound... I think one of the rides at Disney is you get to, like, connect with your own dragon and fly it.
That sounds fun.
It sounds really fun. Jake finds...
Here's my point, though, about this movie being a bad story, is, like, at this point, Aladdin was, like, really having a soul-searching, like, man, I fucked up. But in this point of the story, Jake's right. I got to get a dragon because I got to be stronger.
Right. Aladdin, the goalpost for all films ever made.
It's just like, that's a basic story done competently.
Sure.
And this is not competent.
No. And you think they would have to do it simply and more competently because they had so much time and they had to painstakingly think about every single scene they did.
And they have like 40 templates for this movie.
Right. I mean, right, that was the funny, like, that was the joke everybody made. It's like, oh, it's like Dances with Wolves. It's like, then just do that.
Yeah.
Which I've never seen, so maybe don't do that. I don't know. The clan attempts to transfer Grace. Oh, right, because Grace, did we? Oh, hit Grace. Grace is the one who's dying, right?
Yeah, right.
So they find the refugees at the Sacred Tree of Souls and pleads with Moet to heal Grace. The clan attempts to transfer Grace from a human body into her avatar with the aid of the Tree of Souls, but she dies before the process can be completed. Spoiler alert, she is in the next Avatar film, so we'll see.
Well, flashback sort of thing.
Sure. Supported by... Come on. She should just be in it.
Yeah.
Supported by the new chief, Tsutsi, Jake speaks to unite the clan in Navi, because he learned that really quickly, tells them to gather all of the clans to battle against the RDA. Noticing the impending gathering, Quadric organizes a preemptive strike against the Tree of Souls, believing its destructions will demoralize the natives. On the eve of the battle, Jake prays to Ewa via a neural connection with the Tree of Souls to intercede on behalf of the Navi. May I say...
Why are they trusting the spy so readily?
I think, but I also think that, like, oh, the Navi are neurally connected to the Sacred Tree. It feels very midichlorians to me, where it's like they're trying to interject a sci-fi explanation for their spirituality in a stupid, ham-fisted way. Is that
why? Why can't they just be spiritual?
Yeah, just have the Force. We get it. No one needs to explain it.
You're right. I don't. If you're asking, what does it add to the film?
Right. The neural connection the Navi kind of share with all the trees that are interconnected because we're all part of it. Dumb. Go on.
During the subsequent battle, the Navi suffer heavy casualties, including Tifa and Trudy, but are rescued when Pandoran wildlife unexpectedly joined the attack and overwhelmed the humans, which Neytiri interprets as Ewa's answer to Jake's prayer. Jake destroys a makeshift bomber before it can reach the Tree of Souls. Quaritch, wearing an AMP suit...
Which is the same exact thing they have in Aliens, I think.
The mech?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like there's lots of media with this kind of...
I do believe that's true. That's the only one I can think of offhand.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Gundam.
I don't know that one.
It's an anime.
Oh, okay.
That might not be right. Escapes from his own damaged aircraft and breaks open the Avatar Link unit containing Jake's human body, exposing it to Pandora's poisonous atmosphere. Quaritch prepares to slit the throat of Jake's avatar, but Neytiri kills Quaritch and saves Jake's from suffocation.
So weird when she goes in to like get Jake's body and you can see it because she's 10 feet tall and he's like little. And she's like, Jake, sonny! And it's like, this is so fucking weird.
So bizarre.
With the exceptions of Jake, Norm, and a select few others, all humans are expelled from Pandora and sent back to Earth to deal with an energy crisis still, I guess, which is an important part of it.
Still happening.
After which Jake is permanently transferred into his avatar with the aid of the Tree of Souls.
Before we call John, I have a question. Do you think people actually left this movie with that political standpoint reinforced? Like, they left the movie like, oh, yeah, I will like trees more.
No.
Why is that?
Because, well, I feel like it's a much older story of, like, the imperialist and the capitalist taking over the native ways, and that doesn't really come up with for most people individually, other than, in theory, they're like, yeah, that was bad, we did that. I don't think it actually applies to our modern-day life, or the way most people think of it. If you thought of it more conceptually, it does, but in the obvious way the movie's presenting it, I don't think it's very relevant to a modern audience. Other than to say, yeah, we were real shit back in history, huh? Guess that's not a problem anymore.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I agree with you.
Okay. So you want to do a little bro call?
Let's do a bro call. All
right.
I think John actually likes
it. Go quick.
Okay, go quick.
What do you think about Avatar, the film that you recommended, you dick?
Well, I recommended it because there are two very clear facts about this movie when it comes to your new AFI. Number one, this is the only movie on the list that I think is guaranteed to be on the next time that the AFI, the real AFI, does their list.
Okay, so you have a bad reason. What's the next reason?
Well, the other fact is that this, I think, is... No, it's a fact that this movie is the pure definition of a B movie in every respect.
Clayton and I both gave it a D+.
A D+?
We really dislike it. I think it's quite bad.
Okay. The movie is blunt. That's what I would think about it.
That's a good... Yeah, it's very true.
Blunt, I mean, the story is straight up in your face. The cinematography trick, the thing that made it all famous, is always put in your face.
Yeah.
True. I don't really know how to watch it these days like that. But I remember from the theater being really all the time there. Get it. Embrace it. Be there.
Did you remember, really liking that when you saw it at the theaters?
I did, but then, you know, like, what do you walk away from then? Okay, that was cool. Okay,
right.
What's next?
Right.
Yeah.
And then its themes. Its themes are so... It's just a bludgeon with its themes all right. in your face. And right. you can even take your pick, like patriotism, nationalism, imperialism, colonialism, militarism, all in your face all the time.
Yeah, it's not subtle. We're agreed.
Yeah, and so Michelle said, I have a lot to say about colonialism about this movie. I mean, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to compare it to. But it's just so blunt that you can literally pick any imperialistic or colonial situation, and you're going to get close. Probably the closest is Commodore Perry's mission to Japan.
Uh-huh.
Are you guys familiar with
that?
This,
we're
really?
All very familiar with. Go on.
Commodore Perry was a U.S. Commodore who took a squadron of ships into Tokyo Bay and literally told the shogun, you can open to trade for the U.S. or I'm going to destroy Tokyo right now.
Hmm.
Oh, I actually read that book.
Yeah, that actually happened. Yeah. And I think it's a really good actual comparison to this movie.
Yeah.
Blunt, but a decent story.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so you give it a B?
I think it's a straight B movie.
All right.
I actually did tear up. I did.
And really? The most recent viewing?
We watched it last night.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
I think Michael and I were just laughing and bored.
Yeah, I was mostly bored.
Okay, fair enough. I disagree.
Right, fair enough.
I didn't think it was that bad. And, of course, it made $3 billion or something ridiculous.
That's impressive. I've never made $3
billion. I think it's still the second highest after, like, what, one of the Avengers movies?
Sam nodded, so yes.
Oh, okay. Sam knows everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of how the AFI defines a movie... This movie clearly checks like every one of the boxes except for being really good.
Yeah, but I feel like a million other movies would also qualify for the AFI and they would just not go for it. Like, it's just too cartoony and silly. Like, they're not going to nominate Endgame for
this. I disagree because Avengers is on this list too. And I think that's the other movie on this new AFI list that's almost a shoo-in.
Oh, well, we'll see. I don't know if the AFI is doing this anymore because they realized it was a dumb exercise. But anyway.
Fair enough. Okay, so those are my thoughts.
Let's find out what next week's movie is.
Oh, let's do it. Let's spin the wheel.
All right.
I wish we had a wheel.
Oh, we haven't rated it yet.
Oh, we could do it in any order.
Well, let's rate it first.
Oh, okay.
Michael, what grade do you give this film?
Honestly, if the best parts of this movie are that it looks nice, that's not good.
No.
That's really bad. I mean, it's hard to look good. And it's not just that, like, wow, they had computers. Like, obviously, like, real artists who are very talented, and it looks beautiful in an artistic standpoint.
Sure.
So it's not nothing, but maybe I'll give it a C. Even C minus seems high. I'm going to give it a D+.
I was thinking D or D+. I do kind of care about it when people kind of recommend stuff for the AFI, but the only thing is that it made a lot of money and was a big deal for a year.
Yeah.
So 3D. I think I'm going to give it a D+. Also.
So we're the same.
We're the same.
Yeah.
All right, let's find out our next movie. It is Thelma and Louise.
Oh.
Stay tuned for that trailer.
Oh,
but first,
wait.
Michael, who are we sponsored by this week?
We're sponsored by... Shit. We've probably already been sponsored by Nuclearis.
Let's do it again.
We're sponsored by Nuclearis Brewery.
Oh, what?
Is
what
it a
make?
Single brewery?
It is a single brewery?
They make a lot of Wisconsin beers.
Yeah, in New Glarus, Wisconsin. It's a lovely little town.
Are all their beers exclusive to Wisconsin?
All their beers are exclusive to Wisconsin. You have to be here in the state of Wisconsin to have any New Glarus beer. Come on by.
This is probably the only reason to go to Wisconsin.
Also sponsored by the Tourism Board of Wisconsin. Because, Michael, there's lots of reasons to go to Wisconsin.
Like what?
Like Door County.
Yeah,
where they've got lots of cute shops and beautiful wilderness. Or you can go to the Apostle Islands up north, where they have a lot of beautiful wilderness and cute shops.
So those shops and trees.
Yes, and water.
And what have we learned? Trees are great.
Trees are the best.
Anyway, that's going to do it for us at Flurries on Films.
And cut.
All right.
That was fun. I got a piece of soap.
Thelma.
I'll get it!
Thelma, have not told you I can't stand it when you holler in the morning?
I'm sorry, doll. I just didn't want you to be late.
Hey, how you doing, little housewife?
Louise.
Yeah, I still have to ask Daryl if I can go.
You mean you haven't asked him yet? Thelma,
is he your husband or your father?
Thelma and Louise are going fishing.
How come Daryl let you go?
Because I didn't ask him.
He's going to kill you.
I left him a note.
Thelma and Louise are going to catch hell.
I'll have a wild turkey straight up and a Coke back, please.
Thelma?
Oh, what? Tell me something. Is this my vacation or isn't it?
His butt.
Thelma, have you lost your mind? Woo! I'm Investigator Hal Slocum, Arkansas State Police.
You get your butt back here, Thelma, now.
As you know, we've tapped your phone.
What?
Maybe you got a few too many parking tickets.
Thelma, what happened?
You're getting in deeper every moment you're gone.
You want to step back and get in your car again, please?
I swear, 3 days ago, neither one of us would have ever pulled a stunt like this, but if you was ever to meet my husband, you'd understand why.
What?
Boys, shoot the radio.
Get on.
The police radio, Louise.
Got it.
Thelma and Louise.
How do you like the vacation so far? A little bit drinking margaritas by the sea, Mamacita.